Well, dude, we're going into 33, so in 32, I started the show talking about how my glasses didn't fit right.
Yes.
We'll pre-roll with episode 33 about how I got my new glasses and I can't see right. It's messed up, man.
Especially if it's affecting your vision when you drink.
Well, if anybody knows me, they'll know that three beers isn't enough to affect my vision. But I just got these glasses. They fit my head. I can see out of them. Makes everything a little bit more clear. But they're transitions, so it's like a fancy way of saying bifocals. And so I need close up to read, and then I've got a little slight magnification on the top. But the top part I can see well through. The bottom part I can see well through. There's that middle part where it transitions from the top to the bottom that. Whenever I move my head, things get a little bit blurry.
You'll eventually get used to it, though.
Yeah, I've been getting used to it. The problem is that up until right now, I haven't had any beers. So I started drinking a couple beers and looking around and being like, man, my eyes are starting to hurt. So we'll keep you caught up on the Glasses Chronicles, guys. Welcome to the Scary Dad Podcast. This is episode 33, and we're going to call this one a show about nothing. We're gonna channel the old Seinfeld. It was a big hit. Maybe we can use a couple of their terms.
Yeah, get some of that mojo.
Get some of that luck going on. This one's dropping on May 29th. It's Memorial Day. So drinking beer and wearing your glasses the way the doctor told you to is things you gotta be doing, right?
Right.
How you been going on, man?
Not too bad, bro. Just is a lot of the same old, same old. I got a boy about to graduate from high school, and school's almost out for the summer. You have to try to entertain the little one here pretty soon. Isn't always easy.
You've got a house full of toys, and entertaining your kid is
difficult. Getting older, though. They're getting older now. Well, my daughter, her is just reading. She's into the manga stuff.
Okay.
She's really into the manga stuff. So, you know, she give her a few books to read, and she's good for the day. Give her books and her music. And both my kids, just like me, they love music. So
awesome. Yeah. Mine is about to be out. You know, she's got to go to like YMCA and stuff. So she's in swim team and she's going to be learning things. But same thing. Like my problem is that it's not my fault. I've seen my share of television. I've seen my share of movies. But I'm not a real big movie or TV watcher. There are heroin addicts that are less addicted to heroin than my daughter is addicted to TV. And it's annoying as hell.
But the thing about it is, they eventually grow out of that phase. Like, my kids don't even bother with TV. My son doesn't, he doesn't even have a TV in his room. He doesn't watch anything. He reads, and, you know, he has his own thing that he does. So they'll get there eventually.
I don't think it would bother me as much as if it was just that the taste that she has in shows is just ridiculous. I've probably told this story on the show before about how we were at Comicpalooza a couple years ago, and the guy who draws the comic book for My Little Pony was there. And so she wanted a picture, and so we stood in the line. She's still too young to quite understand the difference, like the whole creator concept. She just knew that My Little Pony was on that table. So we get up there, and he pulls out a print, and he's signing it, and she's like, "I love My Little Pony." He's like, "Oh, you know, that's cool." And then she's like, "Yeah, but I'm not allowed to watch it." And he looks at me, and he looks back at her. He's like, "Why not?" She's like, "Because it's annoying." It's like, like, well, you know, gotta. I can't sugarcoat that.
It's her mom. Her mom. Yeah, it's her mom.
But yeah, this is a show about nothing. We've had quite a bit going on, so we figured. We had so many things we wanted to touch on in other episodes and talk about different things coming up, but none of them were necessarily episode worthy. They're all little kind of sound bites and just kind of some BS that's been going on. But then as we started kind of comparing notes, we're like, well, if we just talk about that, that'll fill up a whole episode worth of time. So we're going to go ahead and hit the history segment real quick. May 29th is a day, man. We got some folks that came to live on the planet.
People were getting busy.
Uh-huh. So on this date in 1453, is the fall of Constantinople. The Ottoman, the Ottoman armies capture Constantinople, ending the Byzantine Empire. 1453. The Ottoman Empire stood until 1917, at the end of World War One.
That's a long time.
That's the age of empires.
Yeah.
Right now, there's really just one empire, and we're it.
Yeah.
I guess you could call China an empire, but they haven't been expanding.
So they haven't. They stayed to themselves, just growing within itself, I guess you could say. Well, you know, technically, when you talk about expansion, though, they do buy up a lot of stuff. They own a lot of stuff.
I have a feeling that Ottomans are back on the rise too. But that's a whole other story.
It's for the political show.
Which hopefully we'll never have to get to. It's like, what do we want to talk about? Well, we don't have anything to talk about. Let's talk about Vladimir Putin. Oh no. I think that's the end of the Scary Dad podcast.
Talk about him playing the piano, which I saw a video of
today. Riding the bear.
Shirtless.
Okay, so notable births on this date. 1736, Patrick Henry.
Oh, okay.
So,
one of the founding fathers.
One of the founding fathers. 1874, G.K. Chesterton. He wrote a lot. He's notable on here because a lot of his... I was inspired to read Chesterton by Neil Gaiman, who then took a lot of inspiration from Chesterton into a lot of his writing. And so basically, he was an extremely well-written, both novelist, short story writer, and essayist. And he would write these long, well-thought-out and well-argued essays on just about anything, whether it was politics or religion or social issues and stuff. And he also had quite a few novels and just general stories. Okay. But he's a highly influential writer that was born on this date in 1874. 1903, Bob Hope.
He's part of my childhood. I'm sure he's part of yours as well.
I never quite understood why anybody thought he was funny.
He was famous. Everybody loved him. He did a lot of charity work.
He entertained the troops. And yeah. I guess anything's funnier than mud. Mud and kerosene and diesel fuel and bullets.
His shit kind of got old after a while. I never found him overly amusing. There were much better comics, in my opinion, back then.
This date in 1917, John F. Kennedy was born. We need to do a conspiracy theory episode.
Yeah.
We need to finally just get into that. There's a lot.
The other day, one of the Facebook groups I'm on, PMAC, which is it's a group fighting for rights to film the police, basically. And this guy threw something up there talking about it was a black flag, and apparently this guy posts everything is a black flag. And they were just ripping him apart about his use of the term black flag.
The false flag?
False flag, yeah, I'm sorry. False flag events. Apparently everything in this guy's mind is a false flag event. He's Alex Jones on steroids.
You know that Chris from Dudes and Beer used to work for Alex Jones?
Really?
Oh, yeah, he used to bring him his coffee.
I used to enjoy Alex Jones, but he's gotten a little bit too over the top.
Chris used to do his research for him.
Wow.
And, yeah, he worked at the studio. Interesting stories from Chris. We'll get Chris on here to talk about our conspiracy theory.
Bring him in.
He's got nothing bad to say about Alex. He just, you know.
But like I said, I used to enjoy him a lot, but he's gotten just a little bit too over the top lately.
I think the over the top stuff sells.
Yeah, that's just it. I think that's what it is. He's making money with it, so he's kind of just throwing it out there a lot more than he used to.
1953, one of my favorite musicians, Danny Elfman.
Okay.
So he's the singing voice of Jack Skellington. He was in Oingo Boingo, and he's done all of the soundtracks for the Tim Burton films.
Yeah, he's a big composer.
So, yeah, from Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Edward Scissorhands, Batman Returns, Darkman, any dark and adventurous soundtrack from the 90s and beyond is probably Danny Elfman, or highly inspired right. by Danny Elfman. let's see, 1967, Noel Gallagher, one of the guys from Oasis.
Yep.
Those guys are hilarious. I mean, all they do is fight. And I wonder, like, is it real or is it not real? I mean, apparently it's real because Oasis was huge and they can't get along enough to, like, run a tour through.
Right. But South Park used to rip them up pretty well.
Have you heard? I think it's Noel. They used to play it on the radio kind of like at Christmas time, at the same time where they play the Cheech and Chong, like the story of Santa Claus. Uh-huh. They do Noel Gallagher, and he's just on a rant about, like, how everything sucks. He's like, why would I want to have a Christmas drink with you? I'm not going to have a Christmas. I'll have a drink with you. I'll sit down and have a drink all day, but I'm not going to have a fucking Christmas drink. And you're just like, dude.
Chill out, man.
You're just grumpy. Okay, notable deaths. We don't have many on this date in 1997. Jeff Buckley, who was he was the son of Tim Buckley, uh-huh. who was the 70s singer-songwriter. Mm-hmm. Jeff Buckley was the 90s. Okay. He was coming up, and he was right on the verge of pretty big fame, and then he went swimming and drowned.
Okay.
And it was pretty tragic. And then in 2010, Dennis Hopper.
Okay.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre, yeah, 2.
Lots of movies.
Apocalypse Now. Couple other things of note, probably.
what is it? I'm trying to think of True Romance.
True Romance. Oh, yeah.
He was good in that movie. I love that his part in this movie when he's being interrogated by the mob. He just didn't give a shit.
He's like, I'm done.
I'm throwing all my cards out there.
I'm done.
He tells a story about the Sicilians and having the heritage and everything. It was obviously going to piss them off. Big time.
And it's like James Gandolfini is one of the henchmen.
Yeah, and Christopher Walken's there.
And they say in Italian, he's like, why did he do that? Like, they're just going to shake him down a little bit. But
right, yeah. He'll get himself killed quick. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Christopher Walken in the scene says, I haven't had to kill anybody in years. He messed up my suit now.
Yep.
But he was going to kill himself. He wasn't going to have anybody else do it.
Yep. So that's history segment. That's Memorial Day. That's 5/29/2017.
Okay.
So what's happening in movies?
Let's get into a little bit of news. Let me ask you if this name is familiar to you. Are you familiar with the name Andrew Bonine? Or Bonine?
Probably, but no.
Are you familiar with the movie Chud from 1984?
I am.
He was the producer of Chud back in 1984. He passed away recently, right before his 69th birthday. Just a little bit of horror news there. Chud, remember that movie very well. It wasn't the scariest movie, but it was a cool movie when I was a kid to watch. It was pretty neat, just little monsters and everything and stuff in it. Halloween franchise is in the news again, because mm-hmm. they will be filming in this fall a sequel to the original Halloween series. So it's not a reboot, it's not a remake, it's a continuation of the story. Danny McBride is very much involved with it, and he's excited about it.
He's in Alien Covenant too.
Yeah,
like that dude went from comedy to straight horror. Like, yeah, he's
one of my favorite actors. Eastbound and Down was one of my favorite shows whenever that was on. I got the box set over here. I'll rewatch it every once in a while. The movie Hot Rod that he was in.
Oh,
a very young Danny.
That is my favorite of his roles.
Pineapple
Express is one thing, but that would, dude. When the guys come up and like start, and he just starts whooping ass.
Well, he says, "I've been drinking green tea all goddamn day."
And he's just like, "Well, just the stuff that he does, it doesn't make any sense." It's like when he's first introduced and he's doing like the little high five thing, and it's like so complicated. Pop, pop, pop. He's like, "Pop, pop, 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 up, down, left, right, up, down, pop, pop, pop," and he's like, "That's how you do it."
That's how you do it.
And they're just like, "Oh, okay."
But when they run into the guy's camper and the guy walks out and he just whips his ass and he screams out, "I go to church every Sunday. You gonna bring the demons out of me today?" This is my hat now. It's totally just he's awesome, dude.
He's gonna make a Halloween. I think he's gonna,
he's gonna make a Halloween. Exactly. That's what's amazing. And like I said, he's excited about it. He says it's not a reboot. It's not a rehash. It's a continuation of Michael Myers. We're choosing to continue it from
just thinking about all the people that they have hired to make a Michael Myers movie, just trying to avoid any mistakes that those people might have made. As he says, the first Halloween is scary as shit. The second Halloween is scary, but not as scary. And then from there, it's not scary at all. So he's ready to bring that back.
Cool.
So yeah, he's all on board with it, and it sounds like it's going to be a good movie, and that starts this fall.
I know Alien just came out last week. I haven't had a chance to see it, but the trailers look pretty badass.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm wondering how John Carpenter feels about this one. I know he didn't care for Rob Zombie's work on it, so hopefully he.
I think he's on board with that. I think he's involved.
So. Yeah, like I said, it's a continuation of the original series. So, another one. Okay, got a question for you. Just think about all the young actors currently. Who do you think should play Ted Bundy?
I read about this. I'm going to have to say not Zac Efron.
Well, unfortunately for you, it is Zac Efron. Zac Efron has been chosen to play Ted Bundy in the movie Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile, which will be helmed by Oscar-nominated documentary filmmaker Joe Berlinger. So he'll be playing the young Ted Bundy in that movie.
I got to say, to be fair, Zac Efron's one of those that you automatically don't want to like him because of like the High School Musical, like the teeny bopper crap. But he really has kind of come into his own as a comedic actor.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, as an actor in general, but as a comedic actor, he's hilarious. He's been in a couple movies. There's just
The Neighbors or whatever it was that he was in. The first one was pretty good. I enjoyed that movie.
And I honestly, and to name drop him because they're in the same movie right now with Baywatch. But I think he's kind of going to be kind of like The Rock, where he's everybody's like, "What, that guy?" And then he delivers, and you're like, "Oh yeah."
The only thing I'm worried about it is, you know, Ted Bundy didn't have the chiseled good looks in a six pack.
Neither did Charlize Theron.
But
I don't think Eileen Wueros.
But I don't see him. Zac Efron gaining weight for a part. Yeah. Charlize Theron changed her entire look.
She did. You
know, she.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah,
I'm gonna give it a shot.
I think he's a good actor. As far as acting goes, he has plenty of ability to do the part.
The problem is, and that's one of those things with like with Monster and with Ted Bundy, is these are not romantic killers. These guys are not Hannibal Lecter. They're not Norman Bates. These are real, genuinely messed up people.
Sadistic people.
Whose murders were not Jason Voorhees type murders.
Right.
You know, so it's not like Splatterfest. I mean, Ted Bundy was rude, like, oh God.
Oh yeah.
You know, so like it's going to take some messing with to get him into that role.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, this kind of work.
And also, I wonder if it's a role that anybody really wants to see. Because you really want to watch him do what he does? I mean, come on.
Right.
But, you know, hey.
But they're bringing it up, and they're going to go through the whole thing. You know, it mentions that it was only near his execution that they really find out just the extensive and just brutal his murders were. That's when he really started confessing everything, letting people know exactly what he did. Mm-hmm. He was a sick bastard, man.
Oh yeah.
I mean, truly, truly sick. And in a final little bit of movie news, have you ever saw Get Out? Did you ever get around to seeing it?
I have not. Okay. I've heard it is good.
Well, Jordan Peele hit a home run with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard it. I've heard that it's great. I just haven't had a chance to sit down and watch anything.
Right.
I'm actually behind on the shows that I'm supposed to be watching right now. I just haven't had a chance to watch anything.
But just not only great, it's just been an incredibly successful movie. I mean, he's made a ton of money, man, with this movie. He's definitely found a place.
Mm-hmm.
He's apparently been picked up to do another movie. He's teamed up with J.J. Abrams, Bad Robot, and Warner Brothers Television on Lovecraft Country, a one-hour drama series that will air on HBO. So he's going to be doing apparently it's going to be like a series of vignettes of different Lovecraft stories that he'll be involved with.
We've talked about Lovecraft before. Have you ever read a lot of Lovecraft?
I've read a little bit, not a whole lot though. I've read, honestly, that there's a lot of comic book adaptations of his work that I've read a lot of.
Lovecraft is tough. I mean, Lovecraft is insanely popular on the internet, and I really have to think that. Well, first of all, I hate the word Lovecraftian, because it's an adjective that has been created in, but it takes a special sort of fortitude to be able to make it through Lovecraft stories. I mean, they're so thick and they're so dark and they're so bleak. It's so much easier to look up a Wikipedia article on the Cthulhu mythos and kind of familiarize yourself with Ryla and all of that stuff. But to actually go through and take Lovecraft stories and turn them into...
Well, this is going to be more like... when they call it Lovecraft Country, it's going to be more like...
Other writers
in the vein of Lovecraft, yeah. Right. The initial one, the synopsis, Lovecraft Country is going to focus on 25-year-old Atticus Black. After his father goes missing, Black joins up with his friend Letitia and his uncle George to embark on a road trip across 1950s Jim Crow America to find him. As begins a struggle to survive and overcome both the racist terrors of America and the malevolent spirits that could be ripped from the Lovecraft paperback. So it's going to have a supernatural aspect to it. The book that it is based on is a 2016 book called Lovecraft Country by Matt Ruff. That's the inspiration of the story itself. When I first read Lovecraft Country, I knew it had the potential to be unlike anything else on television, which does sound pretty interesting. Just bringing that supernatural side of it to that 1950s era where things are already scary enough. You know, what do you do when this pops up in to your life? So that ought to be interesting. Like I said, Jordan Peele, love Key and Peele to begin with. You know, his comedy was excellent. And just when I first saw he was getting into horror, I got really excited about that.
Absolutely.
Because it's just another style that we can bring into the genre that, you know, we can enjoy. It's always
good to have new styles. Absolutely. And no, man, I don't take my discussion before for any sort of, like, criticism on their ability. I guess my thing is that Lovecraft doesn't translate well. Reading Lovecraft, to me anyway, I mean, it is disturbing. It will give you nightmares.
Oh, yeah.
It is true horror, and it's very well done. But it's not funny summer movie drive-in horror. It's like cold on a cold, dreary, wet day when you're so cold you can't feel your toes and you have to take a leak sort of, then add the supernatural on top of it to where you're so scared. But you're also just miserable at the same time.
Which, in the Mouth of Madness, is a perfect example.
So that doesn't really necessarily... When I think Lovecraft and, you know, made for TV, I'm thinking, like, man, that's got to go like either straight to HBO.
It's gonna be HBO.
You gotta be pretty hardcore to be able to sit through that, because it's rough.
Right. Now, also, are you familiar with Akira, the comic book, the anime comic book? He was offered to do a live-action movie of Akira, and he turned it down. I think I could do it if the story justifies it. Akira was one of my favorite movies, and I think obviously the story justifies as big a budget as you can possibly dream of. But the real question for me is, do I want to do pre-existing material, or do I want to do original content? And he doesn't want to do reboots or remakes. He wants to do original content that he can, you know, because the thing about it is, if you do a reboot or a remake, true fans of that original are going to expect it to be like that original. He wants to be able to put his own style and stuff.
Absolutely.
So that's I love that attitude. You know, to me, you know, Bernie Wrightson was famous for saying, you know, his favorite work was where he did the writing and he did the illustrations instead of having to put somebody else's idea into the illustration.
Right.
And it's kind of the same thing. So that'll be exciting to see how he does with this. It's definitely something I'd like to. I'm looking forward to seeing.
Definitely. So did you hear about Jim Starlin?
No.
You know who Jim Starlin is?
Yeah, name's familiar.
He's the comic book creator. He created Gamora. He created Thanos.
Okay.
He wrote Batman the Cult, which Bernie Wrightson illustrated.
Mm-hmm.
He had a big falling out with CGC.
Yes, I did. I saw that pop up.
And his thing is, if I'm going to not charge, I'm going to sign a book for free, but you're going to charge people
to witness
it. He's like, that's some crap. So I thought maybe we'd talk about briefly again, like, in my opinion, grading companies, if they were ethical, they would slab for maybe a fee, but they wouldn't charge for a book that's going to be less than maybe $500 on the guide.
Right.
Because otherwise, if you take a book that's worth X and you put an artist or, you know, a creator signature on it, it's going to maybe increase that book's value by, if they're alive and signing, by really not that much.
Right.
It's more of a, you're hoping that it's for you because you appreciate it and you just want it. But any value, any added value, any upside is completely absorbed by this organization. It charges you to witness it and then to slab it. And then you can't look at it.
But at the same time, if you're fool enough to pay the money to slab it,
that's true. I'm a major capitalist. I believe you offer service, and if people want to pay for it. But I also think there is sort of an ethic to it. There's the guy on Pawn Stars. I don't know. I saw an episode recently when I was out of town where he was at a different pawn shop.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy had a samurai helmet, and he was selling it for like $200. And Rick was like, this thing's legit. It's a real samurai helmet. It's worth at least $1,500 to $2,000. It's like, I'll give you like $900. Like, he did his 40% margin work into it. But at least he had the ethics to be like, you know, your book's never going to be worth your grading fee and your witness fee for what it is, and, you know, like, it's
right.
You're never gonna get that back out of it. And I don't know. I was like, good on him, because he's signing, I think, at Alamo.
I think so.
And I'm gonna get, because I've got that Batman Cult that Bernie Wrightson signed. I'm gonna get. I think Bob's gonna take it.
Man.
Bob's gonna take it. I'm gonna get Starlin to sign it for me, and then so it's Starlin, Wrightson, and the colorist was Ray, okay. Wray. And if he's not signing, I might even just send it to him and be like, man, if you'll just
complete the trifecta for me,
complete it for me, and then send it back. I'm not gonna slap that bitch.
Right. The way I look at it, you know it. You can go buy a $6 frame from Michaels and protect it and put it up all you want. You know, I just, because I see people all the time getting books graded and slabbed that I cannot figure out for the life of me why in the hell you're paying the money to get that graded and slabbed. It just, it doesn't make sense. And you and I are in the same vein where I read my books.
I think $500 or more, then maybe you have something.
You just can't read it anymore.
Well, it's a protection.
Yeah.
It's a protection, because I have been guilty, and I don't say guilty because I don't sign my books. I have been guilty of overpaying for a book that story was not maybe great because it had a cool cover.
Yeah.
Once I got it, I was like, okay, what am I going to do with it now? I'm not going to read it again. The story's not that great. The art inside is not that cool. I could probably throw it in and have it graded and probably sell it. But even then, I'm like, well, if I pay $30 to have it graded, what am I going to get out of it?
And see, you know, when I saw,
and if it's anything less than a 9.8, then whatever I paid for it, the value just like shoots through the floor. So
right. But the thing is, you know, when I sell raw books, I'll sell it for the graded price.
Mm.
You know, if somebody argues with me that it's not graded, then I'll take off the $40 that it costs to grade the book.
Yeah.
No, it's because I know what it's worth. You know, it's I just don't like paying money for a subjective service that I just think is a scam.
I agree. I mean, yeah, if you got a Babe Ruth baseball, a legit Babe Ruth baseball, somebody comes to you and is like, man, I want you to, like, if my grandfather was to be like, son, because my grandfather has handwritten letters from generals from the Civil War. And they're folded into books about the Civil War. Like, he's got coins, you know, he collects his coins, he's got them all clipped, and he, you know, mm-hmm. he collects coins, but he also collects papers and books. He's got, if my grandfather comes to me and says, son, this is a Babe Ruth baseball, I guarantee you I can find somebody who's going to verify that signature.
Yeah.
For a whole lot less than what a Babe Ruth baseball actually costs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, somebody's going to look at it and be like, that's the real shit. It's worth $20,000, whatever.
Right.
Whatever the grading fee is, $500. Okay, cool. I got a $20,000 ball. I pay $500 to verify it. Cool. I got a $10 book with a free signature, and I'm going to pay $25 plus $30 to verify that that's what it is. I'm sorry, that's not.
And half the time, it's people that do that are looking to sell it, and they want to sell it at a very premium price.
Very high price.
It's nowhere near worth that much.
So good on Starlin. He's not going to deal with that anymore. I've got lots of books that he wrote. Like, but I don't want to take advantage of the guy's kindness. So I'm just going to send those few that matter.
Oh, yeah. You know, Alamo's falling on the... this is playing the day after Alamo Comic-Con, which is... they're doing it on Memorial Day weekend this year, which is...
Pretty smart. That's Comic-Palooza's normal weekend.
Yeah, and they're supposed to be getting it back here next year, I think. So I'm curious to see if Alamo's going to try to keep it.
No.
Because Comic-Palooza only lost it for 2 years, and they were going to get it back, which I can't wait for it to get back to that weekend, man. The only thing is, I hope that they don't try to do a four-day. Just do 3 day and let people have a fourth day to rest.
Don't do it on Monday.
Yeah, because, you know, they normally do a four-day con. And yeah. That's just too much. It's too much for the guests. It's too much.
Let everybody off. Let them go home. Take a nap. Drink a beer. Bloody Mary on that Monday.
Well, I mean, the thing about it is, if you look at attendance on that Monday, you're not making that much more. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were to do a 3 day con, those people that went on Monday, they're going to go on Sunday. They're going to go to it anyway.
Absolutely. Next up on the list, have you seen the porn star shark attack?
No. Which
this is a couple weeks. this is a couple weeks late. I don't know her name. It was one of those things that just kind of popped up. It was viral about 2 weeks ago.
I'm going to have to look that up to see if it's any of my favorites.
If here's your face. I knew this thing was a scam watching it. Okay? I could just watch it and be like, that's not real. But basically what it was like, for whatever reason, I don't know what the premise is. So, like, porn, at least, you know, like, the pizza delivery guy shows up. At least there's that logical thing saying that she called the pizza guy.
Yeah.
Like, she ordered a pizza, and so a guy showed up with the pizza. So you can put, like, the two and two together and be like, oh, well, that's the reason why he's there. Well, for whatever reason, they went out and they filmed, like, a shark diving cage, and they put her in it. And a shark swam up and bit her on the foot. Except for, if you look at the cage, like, most shark cages are pretty heavy-duty. And their bars are pretty close together, so even small sharks can't get in.
Yeah.
This looks like a stripper cage that you'd see, you know, at a go-go dance. It's like round, and the bars are like maybe like 12 inches apart.
Being for a shark to come through.
Like, and like really, really thin. And then she's down there, and then, you know, a shark's swimming up, and then, like, all you see is her face, and she's like, ah! And then you see her on the boat, and she's got a cut on her foot. And it's like, oh, everybody's like, oh, the porn star got bit by a shark. She even posted on her Twitter, she's like, oh, it's just a couple stitches and I'm okay. And then it was found out it's like completely fake. It's totally fake. They just wanted to make it viral.
I have no idea why I'm thinking about this, but it's not a shark attack, but there was a guy who was feeding some moray eels and it bit his thumb off. And I'll never forget, the funny part of this story is, which cracked me up, they replaced his thumb with his toe. So he now has a toe thumb. It's the funniest looking thing you've ever seen, because there was video of him playing video games with his toe thumb. It just looks creepy as hell, man.
So do you remember in the 90s, it was John Wayne Bobbitt?
Yeah. John Wayne, Lorena and John Wayne.
So for the youngins out there, John Wayne Bobbitt was a guy who beat his wife. And while he was sleeping, his beat wife woke him up by slicing off his dong.
Cut off his wiener.
And then she drove down the street with it in her hand and then tossed it out the window into a green space, like down the road. And I can't even imagine being those first responders.
He did a porn.
I'm telling this story. I'm telling this story. So, the first responders drove up and down this freaking highway looking for this guy's...
with a bag of ice to put it in.
Severed dong. And they found it, and they sewed it back on. And that's funny in of itself, but God, that sucks.
And it still worked.
So, he gets mentioned on the show all the time, and he's at home right now with his newborn baby, but Chris Jordan from Dudes and Beer, his dad... his dad had a Super Bowl party. This is like in 1995 or whenever this shit happened. His dad had a Super Bowl party. Dude's girlfriend, her young children, they're like 10 years old. Me and Chris's brother, Chris's girlfriend, or Chris and Randy's girlfriend, all these people are sitting around the TV. The game goes commercial, and it's like, we'll be right back. Dan, who's Chris's dad, had it on VHS. He had it, like, timed up perfectly so that the football game faded out. He pressed play. It's just like, boom! It's hardcore. Like, it's like... It's like... That part of the porn where you're just like, okay, this is getting old. He's right in the middle of that. And he's like, whoa, what is this? He starts pretending like he's pushing buttons because, like, something, like, is wrong. He's like, damn, football game. He's like, it plays for a second and then it pops out. And the dude's wiener's all done sideways. And he's like, hey guys, that's John Wayne Bobbitt. And then he stops it and lets the game come back on. And you got this house full of like 20 people with just kids.
Shocked. Just shocked. Janet Jackson has nothing on that.
Jaw drop. Just like. Shout out to the Dudes and Beer Podcast.
That's classic. That is very classic. Oh,
dude, that was so funny. His dad was a lech, dude. His dad would go out of town. Chris would call me up and be like, hey, man, dad's going out of town. I got a case of beer and, like, the house all to myself. Let's party. So we go to his house. So his dad, you know, he has a VHS collection and stuff. And we watch Demolition Man, right? So Sylvester Stallone, Wesley Snipes. Throw it in, watch the movie. Credits start rolling. Like, we don't turn it off. We just get up, the credits are rolling, the song playing. We're, like, looking for something to eat. He had, like, 2-hour movie and, like, 4 hours of porn. And we're like, dude, Chris, what is wrong with your dad? Chris is all embarrassed. Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's his thing.
We're like, whatever, dude.
It reminds me of a comedian, Kamal. I can't pronounce his last name, but he's a Pakistani comedian, Kamal. And he says that when he was 14, he kind of got addicted to porn. And what he would do is he would put it in the middle of kids' movies. So, like, if you're watching Dick Tracy, you have to watch it for about 30 minutes, and then the porn would kick on. And that's how he would loan it to all his friends. They'd be able to get it in the house because it's like kid movies. So he said one day he loaned a friend of his the movie Mask. Not Jim Carrey, but the actual one with Cher and about Rocky. And he loaned it to him, but there was no porn on it. But he told him what.
Made him watch that.
He said he's probably the only person that ever watched the entirety of Mask with an erection the entire time, just waiting for something to happen.
Waiting for something to pop up.
And he says, when it was over, his friend called him and said, "I can't even get mad. That was a good one."
Oh, that's awesome.
That movie. I actually like that movie. You ever watch Mask?
With
Cher and, damn, what's his name? Redhead guy. He was,
Eric Stoltz.
Yeah, Eric Stoltz.
It's a sad, sad, because the Rexer's probably dying as fast as Dennis was.
This sucks.
There's no hot chicks. Like fast forwarding every once in a while and stopping it.
There's no hot chicks in this movie.
Cher.
Yeah. God. Oh, okay. So let's get off.
Let's get something scary.
I don't know why that. Like, I mean, it's a funny story, but it's got nothing to do with scariness.
You know, porn parodies are hilarious. And I remember my roommate had one. It was Edward Penis Hands. It was the weirdest thing you've ever seen. And I remember he told everybody, hey, he used to have all these this weird porn. And we lived in an apartment complex, and he would tell people about it. And we get knocks at the door, where people come and say, "Can we see that big porn that your roommate has? Can we watch it real quick?" The people that you would never imagine would want to see it. Young co-eds and everything would come over. We just want to check it out real quick and see if it's really, if it's really curly. Right.
The John Wayne Bobbitt dude, like,
God. And you got for you. Younger folks out there, you know, that was like a big cultural thing, Bobbitt. Everybody was talking about John Wayne Bobbitt at one time.
Well, dude, like, huge story. Back in the days before the internet, people have to understand, like, there was not 24-hour or even instant access. Parents notwithstanding, all parents on the planet could go away. You still had to, like, procure it from somewhere. Somebody had to have an older brother. Somebody had to have access to the Spice Channel. Like, I remember I was at this kid's house doing a... Like, we were like... There's like five of us.
Spice Channel.
Somebody's like, "Hey, man, call in pay-per-view." But you had to actually call and talk to an operator to order a movie. It was like, there was no buttons. There was no on-demand.
Or you could put it on the Spice Channel, the channel, and it was all...
It was all
twisty and everything. If you were lucky, you saw it. Yeah.
And I remember, like, dude, call up and order the movie. It's like, you know, whatever it was like, wasn't DirecTV, it was like Warner Cable. And it's like, "Hi, would you please open up the naughty movies, please?" And she's like, "You don't sound old enough." And then you got like five guys who are just like, like, if you wanted porn, you really had to work for it back in the day. When you saw it, you were like, "Oh my God, this is the coolest thing I ever seen."
But you had to get through the creepy commercials and trailers at the beginning for all the pills and everything that you could order. And all the 976 numbers. Remember 976 numbers?
Yeah, oh yeah. God, I remember that, just like Spice Channel. It's like all warped. You tell your friends the next day.
You go to the side to see if you can see a little bit.
The friends the next day, like, "I saw a whole boob," or like cleared up for like two whole minutes. God,
scrambled porn channels.
Kids listening to this now are just like, "You had to what?
You didn't have the internet? Google."
Yeah, that's all right. You gotta do. You just Google boobs.
You see them all day. Oh man, there's a new con coming to town.
Segway.
Yes. Move on. There's a new horror con coming to town in Bastrop, Texas. For those that aren't familiar, Bastrop, Texas. It's the home of The Station. And most horror fans in Texas are very familiar with The Station. Bastrop is the place where they filmed two of the Texas Chainsaw Massacres, the first one and the second one, I think. And one of the Friday the 13th, there was some scenes they filmed in Bastrop also. And The Station is actually the gas station featured in the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's now a museum dedicated to the franchise. And they're putting on a horror con where they're bringing back damn near the entire cast from the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They're bringing Sid Haig. They're bringing some old Scream Queens from the 90s, man. From the 80s. It ought to be a pretty interesting show. It's going to be a small show, but I'm thinking about trying to get down there, too. It's less than a two-hour drive from Houston.
It's my birthday weekend, so I'm sure we'll be somewhere.
Yeah, well, I'll be. I'm gonna go check. I'm gonna try to see if I get involved with working with the con. But the only thing is, I called some of my con bosses today. I said, if you know anybody that works for them, let me know, because I'm not going over there to check to make sure the line is going good. You know, the capacity I go in there is going to be a little bit more than that. I think I've I've graduated past that. But yeah, I think nothing wrong with another horror con.
Not at all.
Bastrop, I'm curious to see how many people are going to show up. I don't even know if Bastrop has an airport to bring in the guests or anything, but
they'd probably go into Austin.
Yeah,
that's right. Not too far from Austin.
You're right. But yeah, I've been wanting to meet Sid Haig for a long time. I got plenty of stuff for him to sign. I have Captain Spaulding figures. I got posters. I got all kinds of stuff for him.
He'd probably call you an asshole.
I'm sure he will, but I'll take it from him. Flip me off and everything. Fuck your mama. Sid Haig, for you guys that aren't familiar with Sid Haig, he Captain Spaulding from House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects, and he has been in horror movies since, I think his first one was Spider, was it Spider Baby? Was the first one he did, the black and white horror movie back in the day?
So.
And he's been in a lot of horror movies. He's somebody that is very well grounded in the genre.
So let's talk about, I was at Frightmare, dude. They've been 12 years deep. That was the most thing. That was the most fun thing I've ever done. I think we need to bring one to Houston.
Definitely.
I think the Scary Dad podcast. We could probably team up with Misfits.
We got the support.
Creepy
Hollow.
I think, guys, if y'all are listening, reach out. Let's talk about getting a venue, and maybe at least it doesn't necessarily need to be a con. Maybe we can all just get together and watch a horror movie.
Just yeah.
Get a bunch of us together, watch a horror movie. All of us kind of trade some trade secrets, and you know, Comic Palooza started 9 years ago at Alamo Draft House with just people trading stuff.
Right.
Let's get together. Let's find a spot. Let's do something.
Let's make something for our own.
I'll use the example from my own neighborhood. So my neighborhood has a neighborhood pool. My neighborhood's like very. The leadership of the neighborhood and the charter of the neighborhood is very much living in the early 70s, and they've had to adjust with the liability aspect of the 21st century. So in other words, we have probably the one of the last remaining old school pools that have high diving boards, except the pool's not open. There, you can only go there if there's a lifeguard there. So it's only open on certain days. you go whenever. Well, some lady in our neighborhood decided we're going to have food truck Fridays, and they're going to relax some of the restrictions. And now it's become a pretty decent sized event every week. Everybody's there. Neighbors are talking with each other.
Right.
Their kids are meeting each other. Like, it's outside of school. It's so much fun. But all it took was somebody to light that spark to make something happen. So, comic conventions are great. Horror conventions, I think, like I said, at Frightmare, there was that whole juxtaposition. Like, there's T-shirts and pictures of horrific things. There's Creepshow skeletons and Jason Voorhees knifing people and stuff. And everybody's walking around with a smile on their face. They're just so happy to...
Where they want
to
be, you know, yeah. Right in the middle of it.
And I want to be back there. Like, I, it's so cool.
The thing about it is, the population of Houston and the diversity of Houston, there's no reason why we shouldn't have something out here.
Yeah. So I think we need to reach out to some of our horror-loving peers and put together something. And
Horror publishing companies we have out here in Houston, because there's a lot of stuff in Houston that people aren't aware of.
Mm-hmm.
This is a huge horror community in Houston.
We just need to bring them together.
Yeah, I mean, we've met them. You know, we know they're there. We know they exist. They all want the same thing.
There's a lot of horror burlesque going on, you know, but all of these are independent groups trying to go out into a mainstream world and trying to get attention to themselves. Maybe
right.
We could just bring them all together so all those people who want to see that stuff can see it all at one place.
Yeah. And that's what we're working for, striving for, and that's what we hope to achieve. We can make it happen.
I think let's start looking for a venue. Let's throw a party. I think we should throw a gathering.
Something. Just get everybody together. Share some ideas and see where we can take it.
Well, let's try to do it this summer.
I'll bring my creepy magazines and dust off some DVDs and some VHS tapes, and we'll be good to go.
I'll bring my creepy self.
But sure, I mean, there was horror cosplay at Comicpalooza. I mean, at Comicpalooza in itself, there's enough horror going on to have a small convention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just got to move it on and take it for ourselves.
Well, I know, between the Zombie Walk, the Creepy Hollow, Kingwood Asylum, and then, our friends the Misfits, we could probably get a pretty decent contingent of just a party, just a movie-watching group.
Yeah.
Let's all get together and watch, I don't know, The Shining or something.
I mean, Draft House would probably host us. They did Killer Clowns from Outer Space the other day.
You know, start at the beginning and just see where it goes. And, I don't know. It's Memorial Day. Everybody should be at the pool right now instead of listening to us, so you're probably listening to us on Tuesday. But let us know. Will you show up? Will you attend?
Yeah, reach out to us. Let us know your opinion. If you think this is something that you'd want to see out here in Houston, because we want to bring it to you, but we need support. We need to know that the support's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're ready to run with it. I got the connections. I know the people that you know we could bring in. I've done this a million times, but I've never done it specifically for what we love.
Right. I don't know, man. That's a show about nothing. I think it's a show about something.
Yeah.
It turned like...
Yeah. Show about a lot. Took a nice little segue into pornography there for a second.
Dude. It was so funny. God damn, it was so funny.
It was awesome.
I wish I could go back in time. I think that Super Bowl was the series premiere of King of the Hill.
Really?
Yeah, that's how long ago that was. It's like after
the... Tell me, Bob was a long time ago.
Coming up after this, from the people who brought you Beavis and Butthead.
Mike Judge brings you.
It was, yeah.
And this show is still on. just let you know, the power of Mike Judge. Beavis and Butthead is long gone, but Hank Hill still endears in people's hearts.
Oh, for sure.
Aren't you the boys that ruined my trailer? Ruined my RV, whacking it.
We forgot to talk about the other thing, but whatever. We ended the show already. Hey, guys, talk to us and keep it scary.
Stay scary. Peace out.